ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
In 2001, an American singer-songwriter from all the way over in Hawaii released this debut single.
I know she said it's all right, but you can make it up next time.
That's Flake from Jack Johnson's first record, Bushfire Fairy Tales, with Ben Harper actually on the guitar. It's still one of the biggest hits, and it caught the attention of the Bluesfest team member in Australia and led to the very first festival appearance for him. Jack Johnson is headlining the festival next year. He joined me earlier. Jack Johnson, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
Just talk to me about your first song, Flake. It's such a special track and one that you still play, I think, at the live performances. Did you know it would have the impact that it's had?
I had no idea it'd have the impact it had, but it's one of the oldest songs that I had written. I mean, I can remember playing that song in college with my band in college. We used to play that. It was kind of the song where I found my voice, to be honest. Like, I remember having that melody and sort of writing some of the lyrics. At that point, I couldn't really project my voice very well. I could kind of whisper sing, and I decided to go far away from where anybody could hear me. I went out, parked near this big field, and I walked out real far, made sure nobody could hear me, and I tried to sing kind of for the first time outward. So that song was like the first song where I really started deciding that I was going to try to sing. I liked writing songs before, but it was almost not fake singing, but just kind of barely whispering, like loud enough for myself to hear, but I could never really project my voice before that.
When your first album, Brushfire Fairy Tales, came out, you were only playing fairly, I think, you know, pretty small clubs in the US, but you booked Bluesfest pretty soon after that. How did that all unfold?
Ben Harper, I'd say. It was just like, Ben is like an older brother to me through this whole thing, and he's not much older than me, I guess, but he just treated me like an older brother because he saw I wasn't really ready, but we were friends. He liked my surf movies that me and my friends were filming, and I loved his music. And so my first gigs were just opening for Ben across America. We did a whole tour. And then I think he put the good word in for me for Blues and Roots Fest back then. And then I feel like somebody maybe pulled out last minute, and I got a better slot than I should have gotten. And I think I got to play pretty close to right before Ben, and the crowd was all filled in, and it felt like playing a hometown show because it was such a surf community and everybody showed up and gave me all their love. And that's still one of my favorite sets to ever think about, you know, back then.
So I understand one of your first visits to Australia was actually as a filmmaker. You worked on the 2000 surfing documentary, Thicker Than Water. Talk to me about that project.
Yeah, so that was the first one of my own films I'd been there for. But even before that, I used to get hired to shoot films, some of the 16 millimeter film for a guy named Taylor Steele. He was a friend of mine making surf film. So I'd been to Australia a few times as a hired cameraman way back when, like in 97, I guess, 98. And then, yeah, Thicker Than Water, we had a great time just cruising around different spots like Tahiti and Ireland, and Australia is one of those spots we got to go. And it's like probably the best time of my life just to be at that age. We were in our early 20s and just getting to travel and see places for the first time. And so, yeah, I remember I'd been there a few times, and then getting to come back and play music there was pretty special for me. I just didn't have to carry my tripod or my camera gear. It's pretty heavy. Instead, I had to carry a guitar, which was nice, a little lighter.
A little lighter. Now, you were born and raised in Hawaii. Surfing was and is a big part of your life. You're on track as a professional surfer until you suffered a pretty horrific accident and knocked you into a completely different career trajectory. How do you reckon with that, I imagine, incredibly difficult time?
You know, I mean, at the time, I didn't think of it in that way. But when I look back now, it probably did help to sort of shape what I wanted to do. Like almost every kid who's 17 in Hawaii, everybody wants to be a pro surfer. So a lot of us get a chance to flirt with it. And I was like one of those people that I got to surf a few pro events, but in all honesty, I probably was never going to go much further than that anyways. I kind of always planned on going to college, just had a little fun with it, like my senior year of high school, getting to be in some events. And but when I hit my head pretty hard, knocked my teeth out, and had to spend a few months out of the water, it's definitely when I picked up the guitar and my mom started getting me lots of those tablature books so I could learn Jimi Hendrix songs, and it definitely made me put more time into the instrument. So it was a fork in the road in some ways for me.
A huge fork in the road. Did that trauma change your relationship or your love for that sport?
No, not at all. If anything, I was really anxious to get back in the ocean and get back at it. And maybe it helped me in the sense of I might have kind of kept chasing the professional surfing career. And it's a difficult one. You know, it's a clear path for a few people, but it's a pretty big struggle for others to try to make a living out of that. And so instead, I got to just keep surfing something that I did purely for the love and with friends, and kind of made music the thing that I put the pressure on instead, which was, it's all right with me. It's kind of fun.
Now, music is obviously very much a passion. You have fan favorites, of course, like Banana Pancakes, Taylor, Better Together. Do you ever get tired of playing them, or are they all special to you?
No, not when it comes to live and the energy's there with the crowd. I never get tired of it. I can say I never really pull those songs out and practice them anymore or play them around the house. I tend to, whatever I'm working on, I kind of always play new songs. And then even when we rehearse, you know, the band will get together and there's certain songs that we'll run over and get ready. And then there's a batch of 3 or 4 songs that are, funny enough, some of the crowd's favorites that we never even rehearse. We always just say, like, we got that one. Like Bubble Toes or Banana Pancakes.
But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now.
They're almost like these little songs that I wrote to make my wife laugh. And they were kind of more of a joke. I never really thought of them very seriously. But they always end up being people's favorite ones when I show people the song. So they end up making the record. And I love playing them and I love the energy they get live. But it's almost better if we don't practice them and we keep them fresh, you know, and we practice the ones with the harder chord changes.
Now, your home state has made global headlines this year for those devastating fires in Maui. I think your own town is actually currently dealing with a wildfire that's destroying a native rainforest. How is the community dealing with that?
Well, the community's really rallied together. It's been a beautiful thing to see how much support has flowed towards Lahaina and Kula. And like you said, it's just devastating and it's so sad. And it's going to be a really long rebuild for those communities. But the pouring of love and support that came from the broader community of all the Hawaiian Islands, a lot of fishermen just right in the next day getting their boats loaded up with supplies and everybody kind of coming from outer islands to bring things to Lahaina. And to hear all those stories was really heartwarming to see how much support. But yeah, the amount of loss of both family members and homes, it's almost too much. But everyone's rallying and trying the best we can to support those communities.
Yeah, it's never ending, isn't it, really? Now, you're playing Blues Fest next year on a happier note, and you recently toured your latest album, Meet the Moonlight. Have your fans responded to new work in a way that's joyous for you? Are you getting the kind of reaction you wanted?
Yeah, we always, you know, whenever we tour, we like to find that balance between how many of the new songs we play, because those are usually more fun for us, being there fresh. But at the same time, not everyone's heard them and people tend to react to the ones they've heard. So we always find like kind of a balance, but there's been a few songs in particular that are really nice to play live. The title track, Meet the Moonlight, the texture of the song and the instrumentation is a little different than anything we've done before. So it provides a really nice kind of psychedelic moment in the night every time.
You can meet the moonlight in a night you really want. Waiting in your own backyard.
Also a song called Costume Party. I actually play 4 beer bottles live. And so we tend to play that one a lot. It's a lot of fun as well.
You've been so lovely to speak to, Jack. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
American singer-songwriter Jack Johnson. He'll be in Australia to headline Blues Fest in Byron Bay, held on the 28th of March to the 1st of April in 2024, which feels far away, but it's not.